Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Lakers just threw a nice, solid handful of dirt on the grave that we are putting together for the San Antonio Spurs.
I hate to see it, man.
You hate to see it.
All that, like, you know what they say about hate and bitterness, like, you know, eating away at you. Popovich so hated the Lakers that he decided not to trade Kawhi Leonard here for Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and a couple of picks and I think Zubats and all that. Kuzma, I think, was involved in that because, you know, didn't want the Lakers to get Kawhi Leonard, didn't want to make them better. And so he was gifted DeMar DeRozan in return and all that means. Yeah, basically. Gave up Danny Green in that deal too. Didn't he also give up cash? That's almost the worst one because it's just this like little dig at the end that like, oh, you give up Kawhi and Danny Green? Yeah, and you're gonna pay me for that too, right? Right, for that.
Masai Ujiri's a legend for that alone.
It's elderly abuse, as Damon says.
The Lakers beat the San Antonio Spurs 114-104. They improved to 15-2 on the season. I have that right? Mm-hmm. Question for you. I asked Harrison this. He was no help whatsoever. So I say that the Lakers are 13 games above 500.
I do too.
It's not
six and a half,
right?
No.
All right.
Let's not be like that.
Because it's like legitimately bothered me for like 48 hours that somebody added me with that. He's like, hey, by the way, like they aren't technically 12 games right. above 500. They're actually kind of like they're actually six games above 500.
It's like the old like, you know, technically a tomato is a fruit, but you don't put it in a fruit salad. Like,
yeah,
15 minus two, they're 13 games above 500. Why do we need to complicate this?
Yeah, I want to make math as simple as possible. And you're adding division to this, which, by the way, like you're adding division to it and you're going in the you're not following. What is it? PEMDAS or whatever? The order of operations, like you're not following because you're supposed to divide first and then subtract. So that wouldn't work either.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're right.
This is great, great radio podcast.
The Lakers just go into San Antonio, beat the Spurs despite not really trying all that hard outside of LeBron, and we're talking about PEMDAS. So today's show, we are going to talk about obviously the win. We're going to have some fun with that. I want to talk about Anthony Davis's pick and roll productivity and the way that why the Lakers might not be using it as much as maybe we would like. I think there's an interesting explanation in there. He's shooting three-pointers now. Frank Vogel wants him shooting at least 5 three-pointers a game during this road trip. He's been doing that. And then we also have to celebrate LeBron because that dude's pretty freaking good. So, and then if we have any time, I'll open up the mailbag and we'll try to catch up on those. Let's start, though, with LeBron. I was going to start with Anthony Davis, but I do want to celebrate this dude. It's so easy to take it for granted, especially given how long he's been doing this. But he just, in what was it, 30, how many minutes did he play tonight? Yeah, in 35 minutes, he drops 33 points, 14 assists, only 3 turnovers, was 4 of 7 from 3, 3 of 8 from the free throw line, which that I'm not really thrilled about that trend popping back up. And then the 3 rebounds. The thing about LeBron and like great players is that you start to run out of ways to say they're really effing good, but you still got to try, right? You still have to try to contextualize what it is that we're watching.
Well, the unprecedented part is that he's doing this at this point in his career. He's in his 17th season.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever done this before. We have kind of taken LeBron being one of the best of all time for granted and that he's always going to be that type of guy. Mm-hmm. And that's not how it works out. Look at, there were other Hall of Famers drafted right next to him.
Yeah.
Look at what they're doing right now and what they look like. These are not just like good players or all-star players. These are Hall of Fame caliber players. And not only is he still in the league and he's still a good player in the league, this is one of the best starts by a player in Lakers history to start a season. He's been that good. And the fact that he's doing that with this type of mileage on his body, he keeps talking in post-game interviews about how he's got his quick twitch back and he's healthy and he feels right. Like, you know, we keep he's going to be 35 years old on December 30th, I believe. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks like a player in his prime, like an all-time great in his prime. It's the absolute lack of slippage. Like, yeah, maybe he's not quite as athletic as he used to be, but it's not like he's still doing thunderous things on the court, right? And so, like, that is what I try to take time to appreciate, is that not only is he doing this, he's doing this at this point of his career.
The comparison I was thinking about as you were talking about that was Tiger Woods. Remember, at his peak, he was this physical freak that you just said, like, that's, you can't beat that. Like, he's playing a different sport.
Yes.
Remember, he made Phil Mickelson pick up a weight. Like, it was, that's his greatest accomplishment, was getting Phil Mickelson to care about the way he looks. And he, obviously, he goes through his injury problems, the personal problems that he had, whatever. He comes back and he wins that major. And you're like, oh, is Tiger Woods back? Is this actually a thing? And then he hasn't been back. Like, he hasn't really recovered since the effort that it took to win the Open or the Masters when he won it. And the insane thing as we're watching LeBron is that, like, he never left, which makes it, you know, a little harder to pick up. But he's kind of at the same stage of his career that Tiger Woods kind of sort of was at, and is just trucking right along. And, you know, he had to play that really made me nervous, that Rudy Gay fouled him on an alley-oop. Mm-hmm. And then he
landed weird.
He landed weird. He made a weird noise when he landed too. And he kind of like sat down there with his head, you know, kind of his head slumped between his shoulders. And I was like, oh no, come on. Mm-hmm. And he pops right back up and looked perfectly fine. And I just think what we really have to go out of our ways to acknowledge is, like, one day that's not going to be the case. Like, this, what we're watching is not going to be the case. And the fact that we get to enjoy this as just another part of a really fun season is pretty freaking cool. Like, it's pretty fucking amazing what we get to watch.
It's, you know, one of these days, Father Time's going to win, because, as they say, Father Time is undefeated. But it's got me even looking at the future differently of what this team is. Mind you, if LeBron wants to stay, of course, which would be the first factor. But, like, by the time his contract is up, you know, maybe he falls off a cliff after this year or whatever. But at the rate that he's going, like, he's still a max guy at the end of his contract, right?
Yeah.
Barring an injury or something like that. And so what does that mean? Do the Lakers have a LeBron AD combo, not just for a couple of years, but for like 4 or 5 years together, and everything that comes with that? So, like, yeah, man, this is, bro, I've seen a lot of great players play for the Lakers and watch them very, very closely. And this is, to me, this is the best start by a player in franchise history.
It's been incredible to watch. And, you know, what I find interesting about LeBron are the new wrinkles that he keeps adding to his game in order to stay fresh longer. So, like, lately, one thing that I've really noticed him going out of his way, and I mentioned this in yesterday's show as not really a source of frustration. I think frustration is too strong of a word for it. But his hit-ahead passes, like, he's making a very concerted effort to get the ball up the court a little bit faster, and then he kind of takes his time coming into the play. I would like for every so often when he has those head-to-head passes to fill the trail lane a little bit more than he has, but that's kind of picking nits. But that's something that, you know, when you're trying to figure out why is it that LeBron continues to last the way that he is, how is he in year 17 and doing this? It's that there is never any downtime in his brain. He's always thinking of ways. All right, how can I cut this corner just slightly without actually hurting our team? And how can I, because the Lakers needed to play faster, how can I get us playing faster without it taking a toll on my body? Oh, here's this thing. Let's really make sure we look for KCP up the side of the court, or look for a Caruso or a Rondo or whatever guard can handle the ball in semi-transition. And it's made the Lakers a little bit more dangerous in those spots.
Yeah, it's that in-game load management from LeBron that he's so masterful at. It's also like the way that he takes care of his body.
Yeah.
This is, you know, a couple decades worth of, like, this isn't something you can really play catch up on, where a lot of guys, when they're young, in their teens and early to mid 20s, they're just, you know, eating whatever they want, not really focusing on their body, on their nutrition and all of that.
LeBron's How dare been, you? My body was a temple.
LeBron's been doing that since he was a teenager and taking care of himself. And so those young guys who, as they get older, start to realize, oh, I really got to take care of myself. Like, there's still that wear and tear that you've put on when you weren't. And you didn't feel it then, but you do end up feeling it, like a Dwayne Wade, right? What does Dwayne Wade look like when he's 34 years old, as opposed to what LeBron James looks like? A big part of that is the daily regimen for two decades on how LeBron takes care of his body.
Yep, absolutely. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk about Anthony Davis, the way that they're using him, this new, you know, we just talked about wrinkles that that LeBron James is adding to his game, this idea that Davis is now shooting more three-pointers. I think it's a good thing, but I'm interested for your thoughts on that, Pete. So let's hang tight. When we come back, we'll talk about all that. So Anthony Davis is basically Steph Curry now. That's kind of fun.
It's been nice. He, you know, started off slow, but finished it real. Bro, you know, there were only I had a piece for The Athletic out today about like some of the adjustments that they've made to improve the 3-point shooting of this team in particular. And in doing the research for that, you realize the Lakers, in terms of frequency of running the pick and roll, run like the second fewest pick and rolls in the NBA.
Yeah.
And the fewest, or and they're the least effective at it, right? And if you watch the games, like, how many of these are like LeBron, Anthony Davis, two-man actions? Very few.
Yeah, not as many as I'd like, but yeah.
But that's the thing, man, is that like they're not even having to go to that. They're not even really nurturing that and what that could be. And that is has the highest ceiling of anything that we do. So like, bro, this team is so good. I'm just like, I'm just shaking my head and laughing, watching LeBron just be that dude. And this team is so much better than the teams that they're playing. And yes, they are below average teams that they've played for pretty much 2 weeks now, and for a decent portion of the beginning of the season. But they're so much better than enough of those below average teams to where I'm like, yeah, if this isn't the best team in the NBA, they're very, very close. And they're certainly in tier one and could beat any of the other teams, because they're just so much better than the teams that they're going up against. It looks like a title squad. And I did not start out in that place with this team. So I had to be convinced to get to this point, but like, this is a team that can win a championship, and I'm just enjoying every moment of it.
Yeah, I literally said to Jen while we were watching the game, it was one of the rare games where I wasn't on the recap. I only sent out a few tweets here and there about it. It was mostly, you know, getting back to watching basketball the way Jen and I used to when we were like dating and stuff before I made this a career. And I just told her just flat out, this team is like, it's so much more fun to watch a good basketball team. It sounds like such a throwaway statement, but that's really what it is. They're so much more fun to watch. And at any given moment, you know, because of the type of players that they are, because of how Anthony Davis can pop off the screen, because of how LeBron James can pop off the screen, like, you don't want to take your eyes off of it when either of those guys are on the court. And, you know, tonight, as an example, Davis kind of floats around the game a little bit. And then in the fourth quarter, scored like 9 straight points, I think it was. And then had that block on Bryn of House Forbes. And and it was just and the block that he had on him, it was just, oh, yeah, that's right.
That was just a reminder. I'm LeBron James, by the way, in case you forgot.
So, yeah, it was cool to watch that. I want to get back to the point you were making about the pick and roll, because I think there's actually a couple explanations for why they aren't using it as much. I think it starts with, okay, we know we have that in our back pocket.
Yeah.
And let's make sure we develop stuff around that as our like, that's our number one option in spots where we absolutely have to create a good shot. And let's cultivate other options, knowing that that's where they can go if they have to.
That's absolutely it right there. Now, they do need to get reps before the season goes on. And I would not be surprised at all if by March or April, you see an uptick in that because they know we're going to have to get familiar with that. It's going to be have to be something that we do, not just start doing in the playoffs, but build up to that. They just know that it takes longer to do that. Mm-hmm. That's actually the biggest thing that Houston gets wrong in terms of their approach to an NBA season, mm-hmm. is they're like, their attitude is, well, we're going to do that the same couple
everything
of
else.
Things.
But yeah.
They're like, you know, we're going to do this thing, give the ball to James Harden, mm-hmm. and we're going to do it over and over and over again to a point where by the time we get to the playoffs, we will have seen every possible way for you to defend that. Mm-hmm. The problem is that the teams that they are going up against, they only see Houston once, and then they move on to the next team. When it's a seven-game series and there are high-level teams playing Houston, which Houston is an, or at least has been, a high level team, that's when those things that, even though you did it 1,000 times, you didn't go up against it against a team that's only planning for you.
Right.
And so what the Lakers are doing right now in developing those sets, they've done a lot of great post work. Lakers are averaging 1.09 points per possession on their post touches. Mm-hmm. That would be the second best pick and roll attack in the NBA. Yeah. So the post is kind of like seeing this renaissance in LA, mm-hmm. and that's really cool, right? That's a wrinkle that you can go to full well knowing that you got LeBron and AD in your back pocket.
Yeah, I mean, when you get into a playoff series, you have to basically plan for your best option being, if not taken away completely, focused on highly. Like, that's going to be the top priority. So why not build other options around it so that when that takes place, when that focus occurs, you now are comfortable enough to go to other options. The other thing, too, with how little they're running the pick and roll with Anthony Davis specifically, is something that you and I have talked about a few times now in his poor understanding of when to be an athlete, when to be an athletic freak, uh-huh. right? Like, Anthony Davis can't help himself. If there's a play that he thinks he can make, the score doesn't matter, the location of the pass doesn't matter, the number of people between him and point B, right, don't matter. And I do think, to a certain extent, obviously, again, the number one reason why I think they aren't running it is because they're trying to build other options around their bread and butter. But also, some of it is load management for Anthony Davis, because he can't help himself but try to make spectacular plays whenever humanly possible.
That could very well be the case. I could see that. AD also has like rib issues. You know, when you roll to the basket, you got those taggers coming from the weak side, and you know, get a little forearm here and there, and mm-hmm. the shoulder issue and all that. So that could definitely play into it. As far as AD doing that, like, man, give me that dude any day of the week. Like, that kind of guy. Oh, those guys, you win with those guys. Like, it's like, trust me, I like gasp horribly twice a week watching him play. Yeah. But I love that dude. I love how hard he plays. And he's been the defensive culture setter mm-hmm. on this team that I think even LeBron follows to a degree.
Yeah. I mean, LeBron said it the other day. He should be the defensive player of the year. And it's hard to argue, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you know how in over the course of a game, you'll have a spot where a player is isolated on the wing against, like, especially if it's LeBron is isolated on the wing with Kawhi guarding him, right? Mm-hmm. And you kind of hear the rustle in the crowd, like, oh, we might get something here, right? This is a possession we've been waiting for. I kind of wonder if, like, I know it's already taking place in the Irwin household. I'm sure it's taking place in the Zayas household. But that moment when you see LeBron with the ball on the wing and Davis starts walking up to a screen, like, I want to start getting the rustle in the crowd when that's happening. Because those plays, it happened in last night's game where it was just LeBron had the ball on the right wing. Davis walks over, sets a screen to LeBron's left. They tried to double LeBron, and he just threw a pocket mm-hmm. pass, and Davis threw a thunderous dunk home. And it's just, like, that's that's what I want to see more of. And my question is, how productive have those sets been? Because I've noticed it feels like, eye test wise, when Davis is involved in a pick and roll, it feels like they're at least getting a good shot every time. But is that kind of backed up by the numbers based on what you're like? Are you noticing the same kind of a thing?
So yeah, AD as a role man is one of the greats, and it's something where the stats do not entirely capture the value of that, because everybody knows that he's great at that, so they're going to send extra attention, and so then that means your shooters are more open as a function of having AD out there. But yes, he's averaging 1.22 points per possession as the role man, is finishing on as the role man. That's something where the average half court set is 0.95 points per possession. So if you're not really familiar with these terms, think of it, make it, multiply it by 100. So like 0.95 points per possession times 100 is 95 points. 100 possessions is about the length of an average game. So if you think like, oh, my team scored 95 points in 2019 in this game, did they win? Probably not, right? That's why those transition of those, that, and you know, your putbacks and just actions like that, are, they matter. But if you're able to get that 1.09, you know, for the post overall, or 1.22, that means Lakers are scoring about 122 points per game worth of role man, you know, when AD's rolling to the basket. And that's just AD. That's actually not team wide. I don't have the stats in front of me for that. But yeah, he's still a monster at that. Having JaVale there or Dwight there can maybe make it a little more difficult to get a number of attempts at that. But that's why I think his pick and pop game is especially important. That ability to pop out behind the 3-point line on those, when defenses collapse into the paint, that shot's going to be open for him.
Yeah, I've noticed that he's doing less of the hop step into a shot.
Good call. Yeah,
he's doing a little more pivoting or stepping into a shot, and I think that's really helped his rhythm. It's been kind of interesting to watch that. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I want to talk about the 3-pointers that he's attempting now. I think it's interesting on multiple levels, productive on multiple levels. I like the concerted effort that they're making in that regard. And then if we have time, we'll answer our question or two. All right, so Frank Vogel said that, A, he wanted to get Anthony Davis the ball moving more, and I think we've seen that be successful for stretches. The other thing that he said was that he kind of challenged Davis to shoot at least 5 3-pointers a game over the course of this road trip. And, you know, that made me a little nervous, because heading into this road trip, he wasn't exactly lighting the world on fire, but you know, it's worked out, and I think one way that it is really going to pay dividends is it adds a level of funness to the game. Like, you think of it like they're playing a game, right? So you think this should be inherently fun, but it is a 9-to-5, it is a job, and they play 82 games, and when you add this new wrinkle, and it's something that his teammates and he can really kind of get behind, it adds like an element of fun back to the game, at least for this, over the course of this road trip, that I've noticed. Have you noticed, like, when he rises up to shoot those 3-pointers, it does feel like the bench is really behind him when he takes those shots?
Yeah, I feel it at home too, and I'm sure fans do too. Like, a lot of times when a guy's in a slump, like for a hot minute there, every time Troy Daniels or Quinn Cook would get into their shooting motion, like, I know you're supposed to be a good shooter, but I just feel it coming off of you, right? Like that,
yeah.
That, like, oh crap, I don't want to miss again. Don't want to miss again. AD was very much like that to begin the season. So empowering a guy like that, especially a guy who has so many other tools, that it's easy for him to not shoot those shots and still be very involved in the game. It doesn't like stand out like, oh, why isn't AD getting any shots up? Well, he's still going to get shots up. They're just going to be from different places. So challenging him to do something specific like that not only kind of gets him out of his head and just be like, hey, if you're 0 for 5, you're 0 for 5. Mm-hmm. We're in game 17 right now. This is the time to add that. But that adds that wrinkle, right?
Yeah.
That we were talking about earlier. It's not just, oh, we're going to run this set differently. It's putting players in different positions that they may need to be in game 6 of the Western Conference Finals.
Right.
And they can't be there for the first time when they face that situation.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it was something that he and Phil Handy have worked on while he's been trying to shoot more 3-pointers, but his footwork looks a lot cleaner. And there's just, Stu Lance always talks about this with guys shooting at the end of shot clocks, right? Where you got to shoot the shot anyway, so you may as well shoot it with confidence. And I kind of feel like by setting this, you know, altogether arbitrary goal of get 5 3-pointers up per game, it gets Anthony Davis thinking, well, I got to get the shot off anyway. I got to meet that goal. I got to meet this challenge. I may as well shoot it with confidence. And he looks a lot better in shooting it. And mm-hmm. and the other thing, too, is like you said that he's being put in a spot where he might have to produce later in the year. He quite literally, if he's going to, because he's playing more power forward minutes than at any point in his career, if he's going to be a power forward, he needs to hit those shots. He needs to be able to space the floor. And getting him confident in shooting, taking those shots is something that pays dividends, not just over the course of this 4-game road trip, but over the entirety of his time as a Laker.
Yeah, man, if Anthony Davis is hitting 35% of his shots on pick and pops, this is a title team, man. Like, I don't know who beats them.
Yeah.
And he needs to be able to get those reps up because teams are going to collapse the paint. LeBron and Anthony Davis together? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Are, like, of the players in the NBA that put pressure on the front of the rim, Giannis is the only one that belongs in the conversation with them, even with other great players. And even a guy like Harden, it's not the same. Harden has a lot of tricks and will draw fouls and, you know, has a little more touch around the hoop. But the, like, I am going to dunk you through the rim, like, LeBron and AD are two of the top three guys in the league. Giannis is the other, only other guy in the conversation. And so teams are going to collapse the paint so severely that, like, can you make open jump shots, man? Like, if Lakers can make open jump shots, I just don't, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm feeling cocky at 15-2. I just don't see how they lose.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're definitely going 80-2. We're on the same page there. But the other thing with Davis shooting the three-pointers the way that he is, it makes it so that Rondo's negative impact on spacing, you feel it a lot less. Because, like, if Davis feels like the only way he can succeed on offense is by getting to the front of the rim or getting as close to the front of the rim as possible, well, in that attempt with Rajon Rondo on the court too, that gets a lot trickier. But if he feels comfortable being able to knock down pick and pop shots, Rondo's impact on the offensive side of the ball is mitigated quite a bit. And for a team that's going to use Rondo anyway, like, the thing you and I have always talked about when we've talked about Rondo is, okay, we know they're going to use him. How can we optimize what Rondo is going to be able to do out there on the basketball court and mitigate against some of the things that he isn't able to do on the basketball court, i.e. spacing? And this is one way to help mitigate against that. I think it's a huge development.
It is. Also, like, Rondo's been making threes.
Yeah.
Like, I know teams are playing off of him, but he's starting to do it at enough of a rate to where it's like, okay, that's a thing. I know he was 3 for 3 for a good stretch of this game. He ended 3 for 3 from three. Mm-hmm. He's shooting, let's see, before this game,
I think he's like 48% now.
Yeah. So yeah, he was at 38.8% prior to this game.
Yeah.
And so now he is 22 out of 52, and I'm totally not stretching this so that I can divide that on a calculator right now and say that it's 42.3% from three. but like, he's starting to do it to, oh, I was looking at the wrong numbers. Damn it.
All right. He's 7 for 20. Man, you stretched it and everything.
I did. All right. So he is from 3-point range. He is now 10 for 23 on the season, which is a cool 43.5%.
Yeah.
So, like, he's taking these shots and he's knocking them down to at a respectable of enough clip where when teams sag that far off of him, like, this is what he needs to shoot, mm-hmm. right? Like, we would say this last year, he shot 36%. Why is that so bad? Well, when nobody ever guards you, that's bad. That's, you need to be shooting low 40s in order for that to be a strategy that teams alter and to make them pay when they do.
I don't think teams are ever going to alter their strategy in this respect. I mean, it would be just such a drastic shift that I don't think any teams would be comfortable in shifting away from it the way that, you know, they might. But no, go ahead.
It's like, they're never going to treat him like a shooter, right? Mm-hmm. But they defend him with, like, blatant disrespect.
Yeah.
In ways that if he continues to shoot in the low 40s, that can be altered. Like, just like, can I get one step away?
That's from what I was going to say.
One step away from AD. Well, that's all I'm asking for.
And well, that you know, when people think of a step, so Anthony Davis doesn't need much of a crack, right, to be able to get to the rim and to be able to finish at the rim because he's so big, he's so physical, that it doesn't really matter as much if there are people in his way. But if the player is now a step or half a step away, that just expands that gap. And for somebody like Anthony Davis or somebody like LeBron James, that's all they need. Like that shifts the offense in the direction that you need it to shift with Rondo out there on the court. And again, the entire conversation about Rondo has always been they are going to use him, so you may as well make it work as best you can. And this is a major development in trying to make that work.
That's right.
Let's end on a question here. We'll end on a fun one, I believe. Well, I'm just going to read this. It's a one-star thing, but it's funny to read stuff like this. I listen to this pod because I really like Pete. I wish he had his own podcast. Pete, you got to should we tell him?
Not always the best at promoting.
Pete does have his own show. It's really, really good. So that was that. I kind of chuckled at that. So we'll go. QBreezy12 writes, rank the following players who you'd feel most to least comfortable having max money committed to. Kawhi with his degenerative quad injury. Curry with degenerative ankles. Durant coming back from the Achilles. Embiid's chronic foot and weight problems. Anthony Data Davis or Thompson post ACL.
So do I feel the best about?
Yeah, like if the Lakers had to take a chance on any of those guys, I feel like Anthony Davis is far and away
he doesn't even belong in the conversation.
No,
right?
No. We'll take Anthony Davis out of there. So of those players, though, if the Lakers had to take a chance on any of those guys, who would you feel most confident between Kawhi, Curry, Durant, Embiid, and Klay Thompson?
I mean, these are all. I don't know the extent of their injuries, right? Yeah. Or like what the future holds for that time. Like what does that injury normally look like in 5 years or something like that? You know, Kawhi would be my first choice because he's the best player on that list. And Durant's probably going to get buckets until. So I'd actually go with Durant on mm-hmm. that because he's still basically 7 feet tall, especially with his wingspan and able to shoot. So he'll be able to score regardless of physical degeneration, provided that he's able to stay on the court. And this was not some sort of, you know, progressive thing that he has had a bunch of issues with. He had one massive injury that happened after, you know, some smaller ones were a little bit mismanaged. So between Kawhi and KD, I'd probably go KD. How about you?
I would Kawhi's thing makes me a lot more nervous than I was heading into the season.
Yeah, degenerative is a scary word, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, speaking to people, and again, I'm playing telephone here, so I don't have it so well known that I would be willing to report any of this stuff, but the whispers around the league about Kawhi's leg thing is that it's not spoken about as much as it maybe should be. Durant being as tall and as skilled as he is, like, the reason LeBron is able to age or has been able to age the way that he is because he's 6'8", 270. Like, mm-hmm. Even if he loses a step, all he needs to do is get a shoulder past you and the play is over, mm-hmm. right? And Durant being that much of an outlier in terms of the skill that he has at as tall as he is and how long as he is, he's going to be able to impact games for the rest of his career almost. Obviously, the disclaimer is if he just can't stay on the floor, then that's another thing altogether. But as long as he's on the court and relatively healthy, I think he's always going to be the better player than even Kawhi, frankly. The other interesting one there is Klay Thompson post ACL because he doesn't require a bunch of, you know, lateral movement or he's just basically, hey, go out there and play solid defense and knock down wide open jumpers. I bet on that.
The thing about that, though, is like Klay is the best guy at running off of screens in the NBA, mm-hmm. for my money, and that requires a lot of running, right? Yeah. A lot of planning, a lot of turning and pivoting and all of that. And I think that combined with the defensive responsibilities that he's historically had, I think he may be more impacted than you might think from a 3-and-D type of player, just because so much of it's predicated on him being able to move his feet.
Yeah. Can I give a semi-hot take? I don't think it's that hot a take.
No.
Embiid gives me a lot of, like, the pre-Dwight Howard is a joke kind of vibes.
Where 0 points for a stupid... When was the last time a superstar was held to 0 points in a game? Because Embiid's one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah.
Right?
No,
That doesn't happen.
At that size, too, you would think you'd stumble into like a tip back or something. The thing that I've really noticed this year is that guys are really going at Embiid. Like, he talks a lot of shit, and I think a lot of this is coming back to bite him. And if you get large chunks of the NBA going at you on a nightly basis, that can start to wear you down. And I'd be interested to hear Dwight's take on this, like an honest take, probably not on the record, but I'd be interested to see what he thinks about the way Embiid carried himself off of the court and what he's seeing from Embiid right now compared to Dwight before he headed down the path where teams were applauding when he got traded away.
Yeah, no, that is an interesting comparison. They go about it a little differently. Dwight was the kind of happy-go-lucky but kind of superficial guy, and Embiid has no problem pissing you off and saying what's on his mind. But there is a similar immaturity that's shared between the two of them that I do see where you're going with that.
Yeah, we just talked about this with LeBron and how early he figured out, hey, you have to eat better. You have to really commit to exercising and stuff in the offseason. And they asked Embiid, hey, did you make any drastic shifts to your conditioning or your diet or anything like that? And he said, no, he just did everything a lot more vigorously. And my question is, like, what does that entail? What does that mean?
Right.
You know, with a guy who is that big, if he isn't taking proper care of himself and a chunk of the NBA considers him to be a joke, like, it's going to be, I think eventually this is going to kind of come up and bite him. So, yeah, I would probably go Durant, probably Curry, Kawhi, Klay Thompson, then Embiid, if I was to actually rank all of them. All right, this was fun. The Lakers are freaking good. Like, I keep marvel at it. Like, even when you know, they kind of trudge through the first halves or they get down or something like that, it's kind of fun to know, no, they're just like two haymakers away from running away with this game. The end of the third quarter and the beginning of the fourth were those two haymakers, and they never really had to look back.
Yeah, man, they're like... I'm not getting over how good they are, but just like the glee, they're like, oh my God, like, it's starting to dissipate because it's becoming more and more normal. Mm-hmm. But now it's more of a like, oh
yeah.
Oh, oh
yeah.
They're really good. And that's an even cooler place to be.
Yeah. They're, you know, Lakers exceptionalism was always kind of laughed at because it was exceptionalism for the sake of not having proven it elsewhere. Now they are actually exceptional. Now they are actually good, and it's fun to watch. You can always tell, too, because Twitter is now finding, like, they have to really reach to find stuff to knock the Lakers about.
Oh, man, they've been pretty quiet overall. That's what I've noticed. That's why I'm waiting for the next loss and see who's chirping and who's not, because this team's really good.
Yep. All right, let's call it quits on this one and get you guys ready. Tomorrow's show, we're probably going to do some previewing of the New Orleans game. There's obviously a ton of angles to discuss there. We will have a My Bookie Bet of the Day. So, Pete, you and I got to study up for however the lines are shifting for tomorrow's show. We have a ton of questions still to answer as well, so keep sending those in the form of a 5-star review. And check out Laker Film Room as a podcast. It's actually really, really good. Have a good one, everybody. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. We'll talk to you tomorrow.